Hospitals, as we've been hearing, are becoming overloaded with coronavirus patients, and so many people with less critical symptoms are being advised to recover at home. We reached Dr. Joseph Cabaza on Skype. He's a pulmonary and critical care physician at the Cleveland Clinic to give us some practical tips on how to care for a coronavirus patient at home while also keeping yourself safe. And I wondered if we should take heed from what hospital healthcare providers do when they come home. They strip down, isolate their work clothing to be washed, and take a shower immediately, being careful not to touch anything in the house until they do all of those things. So I started by asking Dr. Cabaza, should we do the same things when we enter our homes?
Yes, I mean, I think that precaution, what a lot of healthcare providers are doing when they get home, is probably a little bit excessive. But during a pandemic, it's hard to fault taking any extra steps. Really, I think the key when we step back and understand the main modes of transmission here, it's really having a contaminated hand touching your eyes, nose, or mouth. Lots of providers, a lot of my colleagues, I mean, they're not even allowed to sleep on the same floor as their family. They're being told to sleep in the basement.
Okay, so with that idea in mind, for regular layman folks who are at home, give us some basic rules when you are at home. And you possibly have an infected person or someone believed to be infected living in your home.
So the most important thing is isolating that individual, whether they are COVID positive or if they're having symptoms suggestive of a viral infection, we should proceed as if they are infected. And when able, they should have their own isolated bedroom and bathroom. Now, that's not always possible in every living arrangement, but isolation is the key when you have an infected person in the household.
This is an important distinction. You say the bedroom and the bathroom. I actually have a friend who is exhibiting symptoms, but every night his wife sleeps in the same bed, even though she's isolated outside during the day working in another room. You say they should be separated throughout the day and the night.
Yes. Short of the hand and face, one of the major modes of disease transmission, 15 to 30 minutes of sustained contact near an infected person is enough to transmit the disease. So if apart all day, you know, that's fine. But if you're sharing the bedroom, that is still enough to transmit it if your partner is infected.
How should someone handle their trash with gloves and masks, for instance?
So the trash, you know, the waste basket should be lined with a bag. And it should have a lid on it. And same for a laundry basket as well. And those, of course, should be in the room of the infected loved one. The caregiver should come in with gloves and mask anytime when entering that designated room, then dispose of the trash. You could place that bag in another bag before placing that in your common garbage, if it's feasible, could help minimize some contamination from getting outside of that designated areas in the house where the infected loved one may be.
Are there any special rules for doing an infected person's laundry?
So kind of a similar idea when dealing with laundry and waste, gloves and mask for the caregiver. When bringing the laundry to the laundry room or the washing machine, the thing is you don't want to be shaking the laundry. That theoretically could aerosolize some of the droplets and some of the virus. The way you'd wash any laundry is appropriate to disinfect. And then after that, same with trash, you take off the gloves, take off your mask from behind, and then wash those hands immediately. If you have access to things like an apron or especially a plastic apron, those could serve as extra barriers from preventing any contamination from your own clothing. So when available, that would be helpful, and then you would remove that and wash it yourself.
Yeah, and I guess the same rules apply then when you are preparing folks' food or taking their utensils after an infected person has eaten. I want to ask you about something that's a little bit harder. We're all in our homes now. There are so many intergenerational arrangements where there are large families in one home together. It's a tricky situation, especially if you have older family members in a home with a person who may have a COVID-19 or believe to have it. What are some ways that folks can protect everyone in the family, knowing that realistically, perhaps everyone can't be in a separate room?
Yeah, and especially in these intergenerational settings, you tend to have at least one or two family members that are considered high risk, just from an age standpoint, let alone from other comorbidities or diseases that make them higher risk as well. And you know, when you have multiple family members, you want one person to be designated as the caregiver. Everyone wants to help out when one of their own loved ones is sick, but you really want to designate one, you know, one of the lower risk members of the family to be that point person. Always stepping back and reminding that even if there's virus around or on counters in the kitchen or bathroom, if it has to be shared, if the surfaces are constantly wiped, the common surfaces that are disinfected, so counters, doorknobs, yeah. You know, and if your hands are always clean, even if you slip up and touch your face, it's going to be very hard to transmit the virus and become infected. And I think reminding everyone of that point is important because it empowers everyone in the families. Whereas actually, a lot of it's in their control. As long as the infected loved one is isolated and you're not having that direct or sustained contact,
yeah,
with strict hygiene, it's going to be very hard to get even the most at-risk family members infected.
Two more questions I have for you. When should someone who's infected go to the hospital?
The main indication for going to the hospital would be shortness of breath. And that kind of is a general term, but if you find, you know, you're winded just from walking from the bedroom to the bathroom, that's a good gauge that you might be short of breath because significant lung inflammation may be developing. And you also may be short of breath because your oxygen level is too low. The lungs cannot absorb enough oxygen to meet the needs to do such a small task, such as walking to the bathroom. That is really the most important thing, because the way this virus can kill people is by that, you know, respiratory failure that lands people on the ventilator. And the earlier recognition of that, the better.
This is so important what you're saying, because we're hearing these terrifying stories of young adults with COVID who are doing things like sitting up and reading and playing video games, but their oxygen levels are like they're on Mount Everest with no oxygen tank. So the warning sign that I'm hearing from you is that it's the shortness of breath more than anything else.
Yeah, shortness of breath is going to be the main thing. It's going to be very hard to have low oxygen levels, not sufficient for your body's needs, and to not have any symptoms from it. Now, there are a small subset of patients who their main sign may be just turning blue, their lips turning blue or their fingers turning blue. That may be their marker or sign of low oxygen. And especially if the patient is somebody who's not very ambulatory to begin with, they're not going to manifest shortness of breath potentially until late in the disease. If they're not usually walking around, that might be a little bit tougher to tease out in those patients. So blue lips, blue fingertips, those could be a sign of low oxygen in somebody who is not short of breath. But certainly we find in this, in the pulmonary and critical care world, this is almost like a silent assassin, this virus, where it's been notorious that patients can be very sick, have very high oxygen requirements, but look so well visually sitting in their bed in the hospital on high amounts of oxygen, but very comfortably speaking, you know, watching TV, texting and talking on their phone. And that does make it a bit scary. But all these patients have felt some sort of shortness of breath prior to presenting to the hospital. But this is what makes it a little bit unique from influenza, which can cause a much more rapid appearance of severe respiratory failure.
Very important information and useful tips. That's Dr. Joseph Cabaza. He's a pulmonary and critical care physician at the Cleveland Clinic. Thank you so much for taking this time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we want to know from you, are you taking care of someone who's sick with the virus? What precautions are you taking so you don't get infected? We want to hear your stories. Go to hereandnow.org.